You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, January 20th, 2021. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Donald Trump has vacated the White House, literally moments away from no longer being president. And on a day when the number of dead in this country from COVID-19 breaches the 400,000 person mark. Meanwhile, Joe Biden's sworn in as president in moments. Last night and through this morning, Donald Trump pardons 144 people, including Steve Bannon, who was charged with bilking Donald Trump's own supporters. Meanwhile, Biden primed to unleash a blitz of executive actions and to issue tons of orders to undo last-minute Trump administration actions themselves. Josh Hawley blocks a quick confirmation of Biden's DHS pick. Janet Yellen implores Congress to pass COVID relief. Donald Trump floats starting a new political party, and joining us later in the program, Waheed Shahid, he is a spokesperson for the Justice Democrats, to talk about the challenges that Biden faces, and in particular, what progressives face with a Joe Biden administration. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Forgive the cold opening today. Joined, as always, with Emma Vigeland. Emma, how are you?
I'm well. I mean, I'm frustrated by the obsession with the pomp and circumstance of the inauguration. But I will say, and I will try to get past my cynicism, it is a relief that Donald Trump is no longer in the White House.
Indeed. And, you know, and I will say this. I mean, I have the similar sort of mixed emotions on some level because, you know, we have, I mean, in particular in this situation, we have 400,000 people dead. We have a pandemic that is raging out of control. We have the same Senate we had yesterday, although I guess it's actually going to be different today. It's going to be 50-50. We have the same Republican Party that we had yesterday. We have the same Supreme Court that we have yesterday. We have a judiciary that is stacked full of Federalist Society and arch conservatives. And, there needs to be real change. Okay. But with that said, let's allow ourselves a moment to appreciate the fact that Donald Trump is just about no longer to be president. And Joe Biden's about to be sworn in. Let's watch that live now. Here is John Roberts to give the oath of office.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand for the oath of office, followed by musical honors.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear.
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
Office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
preserve, protect, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. Thank President. You.
And there it is. Joe Biden sworn in as the 46th president of the United States. Now, my understanding is that Donald Trump still retains the nuclear codes until 12 p.m. on the nose, 12 noon on the nose. I may be mistaken about that, but that is my understanding. Now, of course,
has left the White House, which he did this morning and ducked out. Mike Pence is at the inauguration. Trump is
That's
not.
Right. Donald Trump did not attend the inauguration, nor did, of course, Melania Trump. I guess he was a little bit embarrassed that he lost. Apparently, he did leave a note.
Ladies and gentlemen, please.
I was about to say I would pay an untold amount of money to be the first to read that note. I need it right now.
It will be actually fascinating to see if they do release the note. Because on one hand, I could see, I mean, I presume if the note is not absolutely nutso, that Joe Biden would release it, right? I mean, if it actually made Donald Trump look good, he would probably release the note in some fashion or another as a way of trying to unify the country. That is, of course, the theme today. That's going to be the theme of Joe Biden's speech. And, you know, again, it is hard to watch all of this without a certain level of cynicism and without a certain level of concern. I was an adult when Bill Clinton was sworn in after 8 years of Ronald Reagan, 1 year of, 4 years of George Herbert Walker Bush. I think our sense was that was 12 years of Reagan. There was a palpable sense of relief that Ronald Reagan was gone.
We have all been it is now my
Bill Clinton
privilege
was elected with only 45% of the vote in 1992. And here we go. Here is Joe Biden's speech. We will take all of this for folks. He's introduced by Senator Amy Klobuchar. Here is the 46th president of the United States, also the oldest president ever sworn in. In fact, he will be the oldest president on day one. Even older than Ronald Reagan was when Ronald Reagan left office.
That's unbelievable.
It is really unbelievable. But here is Joe Biden.
Chief Justice Roberts, Vice President Harris, Speaker Pelosi, Leader Schumer, Leader McConnell, Vice President Pence, my distinguished guests, my fellow Americans, this is America's day. This is democracy's day, a day of history and hope, of renewal and resolve. Through a crucible for the ages, America has been tested anew, and America has risen to the challenge. Today, we celebrate the triumph not of a candidate, but of a cause. The cause of democracy. The people, the will of the people has been heard, and the will of the people has been heeded. We've learned again that democracy is precious. Democracy is fragile. And at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed. So now, on this hallowed ground where just a few days ago violence sought to shake the Capitol's very foundation, we come together as one nation, under God, indivisible, to carry out the peaceful transfer of power as we have for more than two centuries. As we look ahead in our uniquely American way,
restless, bold, optimistic, and set our sights on the nation we know we can be and we must be. I thank my predecessors of both parties for their presence here today. I thank them from the bottom of my heart. And I know the resilience of our Constitution and the strength of our nation, as does President Carter, who I spoke with last night, who cannot be with us today, but whom we salute for his lifetime and service. I've just taken the sacred oath each of those patriots have taken, the oath first sworn by George Washington. But the American story depends not on any one of us, not on some of us, but on all of us, on we the people who seek a more perfect union. This is a great nation. We are good people. And over the centuries, through storm and strife, in peace and in war, we've come so far, but we still have far to go. We'll press forward with speed and urgency, for we have much to do in this winter of peril and significant possibilities. Much to repair, much to restore, much to heal, much to build, and much to gain. Few people in our nation's history have been more challenged or found a time more challenging or difficult than the time we're in now. Once-in-a-century virus that silently stalks the country has taken as many lives in 1 year as America lost in all of World War II. Millions of jobs have been lost. Hundreds of thousands of businesses closed. A cry for racial justice, some 400 years in the making, moves us. The dream of justice for all will be deferred no longer. A cry for survival comes from the planet itself. A cry that can't be any more desperate or any more clear. And now, a rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism that we must confront and we will defeat. To overcome these challenges, to restore the soul and secure the future of America, requires so much more than words. It requires the most elusive of all things in a democracy, unity. Unity. In another January, on New Year's Day in 1863, Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. When he put pen to paper, the president said, and I quote, "If my name ever goes down into history, it'll be for this act. And my whole soul is in it." My whole soul is in it. Today, on this January day, my whole soul is in this, bringing America together, uniting our people, uniting our nation. And I ask every American to join me in this cause. Uniting to fight the foes we face, anger, resentment and hatred, extremism, lawlessness, violence, disease, joblessness and hopelessness. With unity, we can do great things, important things. We can right wrongs. We can put people to work in good jobs. We can teach our children in safe schools. We can overcome the deadly virus. We can reward work and rebuild the middle class and make health care secure for all. We can deliver racial justice and we can make America once again the leading force for good in the world. I know speaking of unity can sound to some like a foolish fantasy these days. I know the forces that divide us are deep and they are real. But I also know they are not new. Our history has been a constant struggle between the American ideal that we're all are created equal, and the harsh, ugly reality that racism, nativism, fear, demonization have long torn us apart. The battle is perennial, and victory is never assured. Through civil war, the Great Depression, World War, 9/11, through struggle, sacrifice, and setbacks, our better angels have always prevailed. In each of these moments, enough of us have come together to carry all of us forward. And we can do that now. History, faith, and reason show the way of unity. We can see each other not as adversaries, but as neighbors. We can treat each other with dignity and respect. We can join forces, stop the shouting, and lower the temperature. For without unity, there is no peace, only bitterness and fury. No progress, only exhausting outrage. No nation, only a state of chaos. This is our historic moment of crisis and challenge. And unity is the path forward. And we must meet this moment as the United States of America. If we do that, I guarantee you we will not fail. We have never, ever, ever, ever failed in America. We've acted together. And so today, at this time, in this place, let's start afresh, all of us. Let's begin to listen to one another again, hear one another, see one another, show respect to one another. Politics doesn't have to be a raging fire, destroying everything in its path. Every disagreement doesn't have to be a cause for total war. And we must reject the culture in which facts themselves are manipulated and even manufactured. My fellow Americans, we have to be different than this. America has to be better than this. And I believe America is so much better than this. Just look around. Here we stand in the shadow of the Capitol Dome, as was mentioned earlier, completed amid the Civil War, when the Union itself was literally hanging in the balance. Yet we endured. We prevailed. Here we stand, looking out on the Great Mall, where Dr. King spoke of his dream. Here we stand, where 108 years ago, at another inaugural, thousands of protesters tried to block brave women marching for the right to vote. And today, we mark the swearing-in of the first woman in American history elected to national office, Vice President Kamala Harris. Don't tell me things can't change. Here we stand, across the Potomac from Arlington Cemetery, where heroes who gave the last full measure of devotion rest in eternal peace. And here we stand, just days after a riotous mob thought they could use violence to silence the will of the people, to stop the work of our democracy, to drive us from this sacred ground. It did not happen. It will never happen. Not today, not tomorrow, not ever. Not ever. To all those who supported our campaign, I'm humbled by the faith you've placed in us. To all those who did not support us, let me say this. Hear me out as we move forward. Take a measure of me and my heart. And if you still disagree, so be it. That's democracy. That's America. The right to dissent peaceably within the guardrails of our republic is perhaps this nation's greatest strength. Yet hear me clearly, disagreement must not lead to disunion. And I pledge this to you, I will be a president for all Americans, all Americans. And I promise you, I will fight as hard for those who did not support me as for those who did.
Many centuries ago, St. Augustine, a saint of my church, wrote that a people was a multitude defined by the common objects of their love. Defined by the common objects of their love. What are the common objects we as Americans love that define us as Americans? I think we know. Opportunity, security, liberty, dignity, respect, honor, and yes, the truth. Recent weeks and months have taught us a painful lesson. There is truth and there are lies. Lies told for power and for profit. And each of us has a duty and a responsibility as citizens, as Americans, and especially as leaders, leaders who have pledged to honor our Constitution and protect our nation, to defend the truth and defeat the lies. Look, I understand that many of my fellow Americans view the future with fear and trepidation. I understand they worry about their jobs. I understand, like my dad, they lay in bed staring at the ceiling, wondering, can I keep my health care? Can I pay my mortgage? Thinking about their families, about what comes next. I promise you, I get it. But the answer is not to turn inward, to retreat into competing factions, distrusting those who don't look like you, or worship the way you do, or don't get their news from the same sources you do. We must end this uncivil war that pits red against blue, rural versus urban, conservative versus liberal. We can do this if we open our souls instead of hardening our hearts, if we show a little tolerance and humility, and if we're willing to stand in the other person's shoes, as my mom would say, just for a moment, stand in their shoes. Because here's the thing about life. There's no accounting for what fate will deal you. Some days, when you need a hand, there are other days when we're called to lend a hand. That's how it has to be. This is what we do for one another. And if we are this way, our country will be stronger, more prosperous, more ready for the future. And we can still disagree. My fellow Americans, in the work ahead of us, we're going to need each other. We need all our strength to persevere through this dark winter. We're entering what may be the toughest and deadliest period of the virus. We must set aside politics and finally face this pandemic as one nation. One nation. And I promise you this, as the Bible says, weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. We will get through this together. Together. Look, folks. All my colleagues I serve with in the House and the Senate up here, we all understand the world is watching all of us today. So here's my message to those beyond our borders. America has been tested, and we've come out stronger for it. We will repair our alliances and engage with the world once again. Not to meet yesterday's challenges, but today's and tomorrow's challenges. And we'll lead not merely by the example of our power, but by the power of our example. We'll be a strong and trusted partner for peace, progress, and security. Look, you all know we've been through so much in this nation. And my first act as president, I'd like to ask you to join me in a moment of silent prayer. Remember all those who we lost in this past year to the pandemic. Those 400,000 fellow Americans, moms, dads, husbands, wives, sons, daughters, friends, neighbors, and co-workers. We will honor them by becoming the people and the nation we know we can and should be. So I ask you, let's say a silent prayer for those who've lost their lives and those left behind, and for our country. Amen. Folks, this is a time of testing. We face an attack on our democracy and on truth, a raging virus, growing inequity, the sting of systemic racism, a climate in crisis, America's role in the world. Any one of these would be enough to challenge us in profound ways. But the fact is, we face them all at once, presenting this nation with one of the gravest responsibilities we've had. Now we're going to be tested. Are we going to step up, all of us? It's time for boldness, for there's so much to do. And this is certain. I promise you, we will be judged, you and I, by how we resolve these cascading crises of our era. We will rise to the occasion is the question. Will we master this rare and difficult hour? Will we meet our obligations and pass along a new and better world to our children? I believe we must. I'm sure you do as well. I believe we will. And when we do, we'll write the next great chapter in the history of the United States of America, the American story. A story that might sound something like a song that means a lot to me. It's called American Anthem. And there's one verse that stands out, at least for me, and it goes like this. The work and prayers of century have brought us to this day. What shall be our legacy? What will our children say? Let me know in my heart when my days are through. America, America, I gave my best to you. Let's add our own work and prayers to the unfolding story of our great nation. If we do this, then when our days are through, our children and our children's children will say of us, they gave their best, they did their duty, they healed a broken land. My fellow Americans, I close the day where I began, with a sacred oath. Before God and all of you, I give you my word. I will always level with you. I will defend the Constitution. I'll defend our democracy. I'll defend America. And I'll give all of you, keep everything I do in your service, thinking not of power, but of possibilities, not of personal interest, but the public good. And together we shall write an American story of hope, not fear, of unity, not division, of light, not darkness, a story of decency and dignity, love and healing, greatness and goodness. May this be the story that guides us, the story that inspires us, and the story that tells ages yet to come that we answered the call of history. We met the moment. Democracy and hope, truth and justice did not die in our watch but thrive. That America secured liberty at home and stood once again as a beacon to the world. That is what we owe our forebears, one another, and generation to follow. So, with purpose and resolve, we turn to those tasks of our time, sustained by faith, driven by conviction, and devoted to one another and the country we love with all our hearts. May God bless America, and may God protect our troops. Thank you, America.
And so there it is, ladies and gentlemen.
Joseph Robinette Biden has been sworn in.
We can turn down the audio there. Joe Biden sworn in as president, the 46th president of the United States. Kamala Harris sworn in as the is it 46 vice presidents? I have a feeling there might have been a couple more, actually. But certainly the first female vice president in the history of the United States. We're going to take a quick break. We should also say that during the course of that speech, President Biden, became the official president. He was sworn in, and Donald Trump's term officially ended at 12 noon. I think he began the speech a couple minutes before that. And of course, Donald Trump, as far as we know, is in a bunker in his golf resort in Florida.
Yeah, I wonder how he's spending his day today.
Yeah, I can only imagine. We will speculate a little bit on that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Waleed Shaheed. He is the spokesperson for Justice Democrats. And I will explain when we come back to why we're going to be talking to him in just a moment. So we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. I got an ad, guys. Hey, this episode is brought to you by Magic Spoon. So it wasn't my breakfast this morning, actually. Emma, we've never really talked about how what your breakfast habits are.
Well, I do enjoy cereal if I'm you know, on the move, right? So I'll usually try to have eggs and sausages or something like that. But cereal, I do love.
Do yourself a little favor. If you will look over it to where the kitchen area is, you will see, I think there's probably 2.5 boxes of cinnamon there. I never let it get below one box of cinnamon.
Well, you know, it's hard with the plastic divider still up, but.
Oh, that's right. Well, you can cross the plastic divide, grab a handful. You got to try this out. But it's not just a question of you're going to enjoy it. The point is, too, this is cereal that is not full of junk. Magic Spoon has amazing flavors that you're going to love, but it has it without all the bad stuff. It's a cereal company that's discovered a way to recreate your favorite childhood cereals with zero sugar, 11 grams of protein, and only 3 net grams of carbs in each serving. Many of you folks have asked, so now you can finally build your very own custom variety box. You can choose from the best-selling cocoa, fruity, frosted, blueberry flavors, plus the brand new flavors, including peanut butter and cinnamon. Cinnamon, of course, my favorite. Peanut butter and chocolate and cocoa, I would say, are tied for second.
I'm going to order some fruity. I am. I would love to get back into fruity cereal without the guilt and the sugar hangover.
You and Saul could sit down with that. Not only is it without all the bad stuff, it's keto friendly. It's gluten free. It's grain free. It's soy free. It's low carb. It's GMO free. You can go to magicspoon.com/majority report, grab a variety pack, try it today. Be sure to use our promo code Majority Report at checkout. You save $5 off your order. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product. It's backed with 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. That's magicspoon.com/majority report. Use the code Majority Report to save $5 off. We thank Magic Spoon for sponsoring this podcast. I thank them for sponsoring my breakfast, frankly, I don't know, 5 times out of the week. And my snacking, I have to say, I have my cereal consumption has now broken out of the breakfast dungeon. All right. Do we have Waleed? All right, let's bring him in. We do or you don't?
We do.
Okay, great. Let's bring him in. And Waleed Shaheed is the spokesperson for Justice Democrats. And as he comes in, let me explain why I wanted to talk to Waleed today. Because I was saying before Joe Biden started to speak, I was in my, I think, my late 20s when Bill Clinton became president. I was in my early 40s when Barack Obama became president. And I remember the relief feeling that president is gone, whether it was Reagan era or whether it was George Bush. And in both instances, there was a sense that the country sort of went to sleep on some level, and the problems that were pre-existing maintained themselves, and they were not addressed. And we have these problems. And Waleed, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I wanted to bring you on because I wanted to talk about, I wanted to start from day one. There was a very long honeymoon for Barack Obama. It wasn't until months later that progressives started to realize, like, hey, wait a second. He's not doing what he said about the bankruptcy cram down and whatnot. Now, obviously, we have a situation with a pandemic here. So Joe Biden's job number one, I think, across the ideological spectrum, unless you start getting into sort of conservative land, frankly, is you got to address this. But there's a lot of other things that go with addressing that and can build resiliency and durability within our society. From your perspective at Justice Democrats, like, what are those things?
You're talking about in terms of the policy stuff or the what is working in terms of like how we plan to pressure Biden?
Well, let's talk about the policy things about okay. what you want to pressure him about. I mean, how you're going to pressure him is one thing. But what are the things that from your perspective are progressives? And frankly, you know, we're talking about a lot of young people out there. And by young, I mean below the age of 40, who when they hear Joe Biden give a speech about unity, they're all like, well, that's well and good. But the fact is we have some real fractures in this country that are not just sort of dispositional. They are situational, and there's a lot of people suffering, and I think they want to know what he's going to do about it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we can talk about the frequent use of the passive voice by Joe Biden in that speech about what caused our crisis, how we got here, who is dividing America. It was a lot of nebulous forces in our country who are doing these things, which is a callback to a lot of Obamaisms from his presidency. But in terms of the policy, I mean, there are a lot of things that progressives and specifically young people are waiting to hear from Joe Biden on within the next few weeks. Student loan cancellation is one thing. Chuck Schumer has supported a resolution, a bill with Elizabeth Warren to cancel 50,000. Joe Biden wants to cancel 10,000. There's also, you know, he has said that it's unclear whether he plans to do that or not. Yesterday, he announced to the great joy of a lot of immigration rights advocates, his plan to introduce legislation to provide a pathway for relief from deportation for 11 million undocumented immigrants and also a pathway to citizenship for those 11 million undocumented immigrants. That has been on the back burner since 2006.
Right.
No one has had relief from those deportations that have skyrocketed, specifically under President Obama. And then obviously the climate crisis. Just this past weekend, the Sunrise Movement held actions at Senator Schumer and Senator Durbin's homes, calling for action on climate to be a number one priority. Joe Biden says he intends to include significant climate investments in this multi-trillion-dollar infrastructure package, which is probably going to be announced in February or March. And there are a series of actions being held tomorrow. So to your point where progressives perhaps sat on their hands when Obama was elected, that is not true this time around with the action that we've seen from progressive movements, with the actions happening all across the country tomorrow by the Sunrise Movement, and also the voices that members of the Squad and the Progressive Caucus have already raised since November on things like the COVID relief, things on what the Democrats are doing to hold Republicans accountable for the insurrection. That was just not the case in 2009. And so I am optimistic for the next 9 months, in part because I have to be, because if we can't get things done in the next 9 months, then I don't know what happens after that. We've sat around for 10 years waiting for unified control. So if we can't figure out how to deliver results for the American people, it's really a doomsday scenario for our democracy and for people in this country and across the globe.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing that I was struck by, too. This Biden speech, now he did, you know, he ticked off. He said health care. He said climate change. Much of the speech was it was both sort of like metaphorical in the sense that, you know, there was sort of like, well, it is true that as a nation, we are dealing with a pandemic. And on some level, like the sort of the the passive quality, like this pandemic came upon us. It wasn't a function of somebody, you know, hitting a button or somebody, executing a policy and we have a pandemic. The extremity of this pandemic, I think, is a failure of policy. But everything else he referred to was as if we were fighting some outside enemy. And without a sort of acknowledgement that we're not just having a dispositional disagreement. There are people who are pursuing their agenda, and it's coming at the cost of the agenda of hundreds of millions of people, corporations, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, what is the plan from a progressive perspective on how to focus Joe Biden's, attention? Like, at one point, when do we start to, how do we break down? This is rhetoric that a lot of people are going to tune out of politics after today, and they're going to go, Joe Biden's a good guy. And if they hear, like, maybe Mitch McConnell is preventing Joe Biden from doing his plan, maybe that'll have some benefit for Democrats. But he also needs to actually make that pivot, right, at one point in practice.
Mm-hmm. Well, to your point, I mean, there's this weird part of American civic religion that somehow Abraham Lincoln was an extremely unifying figure who brought the country together in this very peaceful way to take on the slaveholding oligarchy in the South and move past our divisions magically. And Abraham Lincoln was one of the most divisive figures in American history. We had a civil war, and Biden again and again refers to Abraham Lincoln as a unifying figure, but Lincoln pursued a path of the abolition of slavery and the destruction of the slaveholding oligarchy in the South was by all means a controversial move at the time, and so it's this weird part of American civic religion that that things just happen out of our kind hearts and bringing the country together, when in actuality there was a literal war that happened, and Lincoln was moved to fight that war against a pernicious force in our democracy that was rebelling against the country.
Let me just put even a finer point on that point, because we have done many interviews about Reconstruction, which follows. I just did an interview that I pre-taped yesterday about one of the massacres that followed through Reconstruction. I mean, there are literally just a massacre per state that took place through Reconstruction to usher in Jim Crow. It's quite clear to me, anyways, after interviewing a lot of historians, that this unity really never happened. I mean, it's conceivable, I think, on some level, that we came together when we fought World War I to some extent, and certain, maybe World War II to some extent. But really, like, there was no, in terms of Lincoln, I mean, obviously he was shot to death. But there was no real, this unity, like you say, it is an article of faith that really is highly elusive. And there's no evidence, I think, in American history that, at least in improving domestic situations, that the pursuit of unity brings us that.
Yeah. I mean, we could argue about, Lincoln also uses the language of unity to achieve his goals. And so perhaps it's just rhetorical, but there is this weird, we obscure what actually happened. We don't, the story of what happens to Abraham Lincoln is never even mentioned.
Right.
To answer your second question, I think there are several people on Biden's economic team who are genuine progressives, Bharat Ramamurthy, Ali Zaidi on the climate task force, people like Heather Boushey, Jared Bernstein. Their job is not to be, people who deliver speeches. Their job is to make sure the COVID relief package is as bold as it can be can get through Congress. Their job is to work on that infrastructure package that is upcoming. And I do think that, it is night and day between what this administration is proposing versus what the Obama administration proposed. Yeah. I mean, the Obama administration was afraid, because of Rahm Emanuel and Larry Summers, and Timothy Geithner to use the T word, and the T word was trillion. And, you know, that said, there are improvements that I believe progressives are going to push for on things related to the stimulus checks, things related to the amount of childcare subsidies that are going out in this relief package, things that are going on with the expansion of Medicare, perhaps. But it is, you know, we should acknowledge the historic shift that has happened in the Democratic Party. And while there is much to push on, the inclusion of the $15 minimum wage in this package is a victory that progressives should celebrate. This is something that progressives were the ones who fought on this issue for years. It, you know, from 2012 to 2016, it was a radical, crazy idea, so much so that Hillary Clinton wouldn't embrace it in the presidential primary. And so I do want to savor this moment today also, that there are victories that progressives have won. And I know that this thing tends to happen when progressives push and push and push for something. The Democratic establishment eventually claims it, and then we forget that it was our idea to begin with. But it's important to say that, you know, we helped deliver those victories.
Yeah, and that shift in the Democratic Party, I would say, is a large result of the work the Justice Democrats have done in just primarying the right-wing Democrats and getting a lot of these progressives through, shifting the Overton window, which is an overused phrase. But I think the point about more things being possible with Biden than even with Obama because of the people surrounding him, it is true. And also, I think there's this perception that Biden is more conservative than Obama, which I guess is true based on the rhetoric that was used. I mean, Obama ran on more progressive rhetoric, but then again, surrounded himself by people like Summers and Rahm Emanuel. And Biden, Sam makes this point, and I think it's so well said. He likes to place himself at the center of the Democratic Party and then go from there. And the Democratic Party has shifted because of these progressive lawmakers and because they've changed what's possible. Can you talk about the role of some of the Justice Democrat candidates in pushing that conversation forward more specifically?
Well, I think one success point or one effect of the Justice Democrats' victories in the past two cycles, first with AOC and Ayanna Pressley, and then with Cori Bush, Jamal Bowman, Marie Newman, and others, is that it's actually created space for the inclusion of those people in the Progressive Caucus. Helped organize the Progressive Caucus this year to pass a reform package that will make them into a more cohesive, unified body in which, the chair of the Progressive Caucus, Pramila Jayapal, who is also Justice Democrat, has said she intends to use that as a leverage point to organize the bloc much more than it's ever been organized, to push for concessions from Nancy Pelosi. The inclusion of checks at all in Trump's stimulus deal that was passed before Biden took office was because of Bernie Sanders and Pramila Jayapal both pushing for some sort of checks to be included. That is a huge achievement of the effect of work of the Justice Democrats, of the Sunrise Movement, of the DSA. And I think we're going to see that continue into the administration on immigration, on childcare, on climate, on justice reform issues. And what has happened is that someone like Joe Biden or someone like Chuck Schumer will say, I represent the center point of the Democratic Party. That center has moved. If you can grab hold of that center and shift it, it can move a lot of things. The last time progressives were able to unseat a incumbent corporate backed Democrat from the left in a primary and then in for Congress was like Donna Edwards in 2006. So there was a huge gap between 2006 and 2018. And so
if you can
show that your movement can actually deliver votes and unseat people, which is extremely hard to do because, you know, I've spent the past 2 years doing that. It goes a long way, even if it's just a handful of seats.
That last point, I think folks really need to have that in the forefront of their mind. What Justice Democrats have been able to do in the course of two cycles is really stunning based upon what the experience in the 20 years prior to that was. And so let me ask you this. Justice Democrats wrote a memo along with the Sunrise Movement, along with the New Deal strategies, entitled What to Do When Republicans Block Biden. I'm going to guess that the Republicans are going to try and block Biden. What should Biden do, or what should we do?
So the memo basically outlines several points, which is basically that, yes, Republicans will likely not deliver the 10 votes needed to pass things that Joe Biden wants to pass. And so what should Joe Biden do? Well, the first thing is that he should not water his priorities down and then invite Mitt Romney and Susan Collins into the White House for these long meetings over the series of weeks and months. President Obama, in his memoirs, even admits that all the meetings he had with Olympia Snowe and Chuck Grassley were an huge waste of time. That the last meeting he has with Chuck Grassley, President Obama says to Grassley, "What could I do to actually get you to support this bill?" And Grassley admits nothing. And that was something that Obama thought was the
Thanks
right thing
for all
to
the
do
lunches.
For optics reasons. His advisors told him to do that. I think it would be a mistake for Joe Biden to, one, water hit down his priorities, and two, waste precious time by courting these Republicans through these PR stunts that don't really, you know, don't win any favors for Democrats. The second thing is just we are under the impression that reconciliation is an okay step, but ending the filibuster is much more effective to getting the gains that Democrats want. The issue there is that there are many things that Democrats and progressives want to see, particularly on democracy reform, on things like immigration, that could potentially face hurdles through reconciliation that are not tax and spending issues alone.
Voting
and
rights, so,
voting rights,
the Voting Rights Act, immigration, et cetera.
Campaign finance reform, all these things. Like I know our friend Bernie Sanders is very passionate about reconciliation. There are some things that can be done through reconciliation, but we should not let Biden off the hook on the filibuster, and we should not let Chuck Schumer off the hook on ending the filibuster. And so,
or President Joe Manchin, for that matter, right?
And there is precedent for someone like Harry Reid saying he was against going nuclear and then going nuclear on something. And so people, you know, especially in the Trump era, people have flipped their position on number of things. And I think this is a key civil rights struggle, a key democracy reform struggle, to allow the majority, the multiracial majority that elected Joe Biden, to govern without 20 senators who represent 25% of the population, many of whom aided and abetted the insurrection that took place, to have a say in what Democrats do. And so that is a huge fight over the next several, you know, 100 days, is to really push on that message. And you know, we also need to hold our allies, some of our progressive allies, to that too.
And just lastly, I mean, is that what you, I mean, is this a fight? Are we gonna, if we're in May, let's say, and none of this has happened, I mean, is there a window when this stuff needs to happen? Is there a certain amount of time where it's like, okay, Biden needs to show that there's obstruction, or there needs to be an argument that they're being obstructed? I mean, what is the timing of all this? Because we should also say, obviously, there's very strong, obviously, policy arguments for this, but there's also very strong political arguments for this. You know, it seems like the Biden administration understands that if they can't get a bunch of stuff done in the first year, and it's got to be, they got to go whole hog. There's no pick and choose which, you know, agenda we're going to do, and once we get it in, we can ride it out. Because 2022 could go really bad, or it could go okay, it seems to me. And so, and I feel like the Biden administration knows that. But what, like, in your mind, do you have a set number of days? We say 100 days because it's convenient, but do you have a set number of days? In fact, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I just want you to answer that question, and then we'll wrap things up with that. Quick break here. So before the break, Waleed, I was asking you, what is your timeline? Like, what, like, when do you, is there a certain amount of days out where you're like, oh, this is not going to happen, or this needs to happen within this certain period of time?
I mean, I think he has this 100 days to deliver his agenda. And if he's unable to deliver his many parts of his agenda within that 100 days, I think he's not, even the goals that Biden is setting for himself, he's not going to be able to achieve. You know, I do want to judge Joe Biden for who Joe Biden is. And if his strategy, which seems like he wants to present something to Republicans, he wants to, you know, provoke them to denying something that's popular like COVID relief. He does need to figure out, you know, we cannot let this go on for several months because, you know, when the average, like, you know, median voter or whoever in some of these swing states in 2022, a lot of them will feel, oh, it's politics as usual. Both sides are to blame. They can't get along. And that's not what's happening. So Joe Right. Biden really needs to take control of that narrative and paint the picture that it's actually a small minority of the country, you know, population-wise, that is obstructing really popular things from happening. And so I think also he has, if going into 2022, it would be a historic achievement if Democrats are up in the opinion polls going into 2022. It rarely happens in our country's history that the party of the president is beating the opposition party going into the midterm. So unless you're doing something on the level of the New Deal or the Great Society, which is what he is supposed to do in the next 9 months, that is really hard to achieve. And so that is what he needs to do.
Yep. I think that's a very good point. And I think there's a limited a shelf life on the bad taste that the Republicans and Donald Trump has left in the mouths of Americans. And I think he needs to capitalize on that. Waleed Shaheed, Justice Democrats, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Waleed.
Thank you. Appreciate all your work.
Folks, Emma, so that's it. We have a new president. it's going to be a different day tomorrow.
Well, we keep the pressure on. That's what we do, you know.
Exactly. And I think this is really important for folks who pay attention to politics. I think the entire country has taken is what I shouldn't say the entire country. There's a lot of people who thought that Q was real and that Donald Trump was going to roll up everybody on that stage. But
didn't happen.
For a significant portion of the country, a lot of people are taking a deep breath. Well deserved. You should. But we need to keep the pressure on because if Donald Trump can follow Barack Obama, who knows can follow Joe Biden unless Joe Biden makes it really clear what the Democratic Party can do for you as opposed to the Republicans. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. See you then. And for those of you sticking around, in the fun half today, we're going to take a lot of phone calls, going to allow people to express their joy in saying goodbye to Donald Trump, express their hopes with Joe
Biden.
What's
your feeling right now? Like, if you could encapsulate how you feel currently. Because I'm getting texts from my family about how they're crying with joy. I don't feel that.
I mean, look, I was saying this before, and I've said this a million times before on this program. I remember where I was when Bill Clinton was elected. It wasn't the inauguration, but it was the night of the election. And the relief that the Reagan era had ended was massive. And then people went to sleep. When Barack Obama was elected, the sense of elation and hope and expectation was overwhelming, even though I was aware at that time about they had shut down outside organizations and they were picking Rahm Emanuel. I mean, I remember the, and I think during that brief period, I'm not quite sure. I think we were doing Break Room Live, Marin and I think by then. But just then, and I think I remember thinking when they appointed, when it was clear that Rahm Emanuel was going to be the chief of staff, I remember trying to like having to really try and convince myself like, oh, well, okay, he's the type of guy you want on your side. You know,
yeah, like he's a bulldog, but you know, he'll fight for the right position. I mean, that those first 2 years were just convincing oneself that the rhetoric was going to match the campaign.
I will say that, it was the summer of 2009. I remember it quite clearly. I was guesting on the Campbell Brown show on CNN. I don't know why I remember who she was. And I remember I was saying that progressives were upset and this is a real problem with the cram down and the bankruptcy bill. And I remember her playing like a Bill Maher clip saying, you're an idiot or something to, you know, to people who were criticizing Obama at that time. And that's when it took 8 or 9 months. And I've been saying, I think since the beginning of this campaign, Joe Biden's not going to get that type of honeymoon. Now,
no,
he also,
well, he doesn't have that charisma to ride, to ride off of. And it's a different time. It's just a different time.
It's a different time. And there's a different, it's also, you know, Barack Obama represented a, at least symbolically, a massive shift in, what this country would allow on some level.
Oh, and I remember. I mean, that, like, I was young, but I remember that feeling when, you know, he was inaugurated. It's very different than what I feel
And it was
right
very
now.
Exciting. It was very exciting.
Yes.
And, you know,
I was in the dorm and we were making fun of the guy who voted for McCain and Palin. It was a pretty nice feeling.
Lots of dunking on Sarah Palin, lots of, you know, superiority of being on the left, being on the smart side. I feel like that was so much of that era of liberalism, like those calendars that had Bushisms on it. I mean, that was what there was a lot of that.
All in favor of that type of mockery. I have to say I'm all in favor of that type of mockery and smugness. However, it has to come. I mean, I think people know that. About
but the Trump era, like mockery, there's something that's off about it. It didn't hit in the way that the Bush mockery did.
Well, because it was just like, I mean, you know, what, like, did you really need to add anything to it? Right. I mean, the guy was,
that's the point. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And, but I think the country or elements of the country have moved significantly to the left. I think we see it reflected in elected Democrats in the sense that, like, you know, Wally was right. Like Donna Edwards was the last sort of like incumbent challenge that I remember. And, you know, she's progressive, but she wasn't, you know, she wasn't
AOC
and she was alone. I mean, there was no movement behind it. It was just like a one-off. Like we, you know, the Joe Lieberman was challenged and was knocked off, at least in the primary, by Ned Lamont. And Ned Lamont is just a sort of, you know, typical, you know, Democrat. And,
well, Lieberman was just that bad. I mean, like, that's how much it shifted.
I mean, yes. And Lieberman, you know, Lieberman was unique insofar he was a blue state Democrat who was, you know,
he makes Manchin look like, you know, Elizabeth Warren.
Well, I mean, I'm
that's
not,
too far, but
I don't know exactly. I mean, it was a different game. Manchin has been, you know, relatively like Manchin projects who he is. Joe Lieberman, the whole thing with Joe Lieberman was he's with us on everything but the war. But it turned out he was with us on nothing, including the war. But I just think that there's two dynamics going on. One is there's this massive pandemic and I think that is going to influence Joe Biden to go big because he knows he has to go big and he has the rhetorical cover of the pandemic, which I think most people want to see resolved. And to put other things in it, you know, to mix other things into that bill as an addressing of our society, because, you know, the issue of the pandemic is not just how do we stop this pandemic. It is laid bare weaknesses that we have within our society. And it is these type of crises that show you, you know, earthquake comes and you find out which buildings have been built to code and which haven't. And on some level, we're starting to realize, like, we have major aspects of our society. And I think, you know, on the left, I think we've recognized this, but I'm saying broader parts of the country realize that we have major aspects of the infrastructure, the social and physical infrastructure of our society that are woefully not up to code, essentially, you know, and we need to enhance those. And if he can make that argument, if he needs to do the, you know, this is a trust but verify type of situation. In fact, it's not even necessarily a full trust. The unity talk, if it is being deployed in the same way that Waleed made the point that Lincoln did, all well and good. But if it's something that Joe Biden believes is attainable, I despair a little bit. But I have a feeling at least the people around him realize that. So, all right, well, let's take a break. We're going to talk more about this in the next fun half. Folks, just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, check out our merch, shop.majorityreportradio.com. We got now beanies. We got long sleeve t-shirts. We got
I wore that Left is Best t-shirt to bed last night.
Oh, you
very
did?
Much enjoyed it. Yeah. I mean, I kind of stole it, but I thought I didn't mean to steal it. I really didn't. I just I brought it home and then I put it in the wash and I was like, I guess this is mine now.
That sounds like you stole it.
Commissary right, privileges review board coming.
It's not stealing if you wash it first.
That's right.
Right.
That's sort of the classic, like, oh, hey, do you want this ice cream cone? Oh, I'm sorry. I licked it all.
Well,
but you can feel free.
Okay. I thought it was other laundry. So I washed it and I was like, oh, geez, this was the shirt that Sam had me, you know, show off on the show. And
what
then
is other laundry?
Like I put it with colors. Like it was in my bag. I just was like, I had a sweatshirt in there. I wasn't thinking. And I feel this guilt when like
this feels like it's practiced.
It's
like, did you stand in front of a mirror and practice this whole thing? Like, I know I had it with the other laundry.
Oh, whoops. Oops. I'm just collecting all of the laundry right now, including the merchandise.
I feel guilt when I wear it. And I needed to like,
you also happened to wash the carpenter pencils too, didn't you? By
yes,
mistake.
And now, all the
obviously,
beanies.
We yeah. can't. Well, nevertheless, folks, there you go. I mean, it. You can purchase it, or if you can figure out a clever way like Emma, you can steal it.
You can steal it.
Yeah. You can steal the merch over at shop.majorityreportradio.com. Also, don't forget Nomiki's show today. You can find it at youtube.com/. The Nomiki Show, and I don't know who's on today, but I imagine they're going to be talking about the inauguration and about the end of the Trump administration. Also, check out the Antifada. They're doing Twitch streams like three nights a week now, twitch.tv/TheAntifada. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leck media universe?
Thursday night at 8 Eastern, Left Reckoning, we're going to have Milton Alamadi on to talk about Yoweri Museveni in Uganda. He raided, basically he did what Trump tried to do. He did looks like a self coup. There was what appears to be another fraudulent election in Uganda. And then he surrounded the election politicians' compound with the military. So we have Milton Alamadi to inform us about that tomorrow night. Left Reckoning YouTube channel, patreon.com/Left Reckoning.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Head into the fun half, 646-257-3920. We're going to take your phone calls. As of yet, I have not heard any reports of any type of violence at state capitals around the country. That's great. I have to concede that I thought there was a decent chance that we would see something like that.
The aftershock of what happened could just be like, all right, everybody stand instead of, uprising. It's the stand back and stand by kind of deal. I don't know.
It's possible. I mean, look, this stuff has never gone away. It's never going to go away. I mean, we had Timothy McVeigh. We had those guys from Nevada who took over in Oregon. I mean, this is a feature of the United States. But as of today, so far, still a peaceful day.
And all I got to say, Trump, just real quick, Trump not having his social media. I wonder, it seems like it's taken a lot of the air out of the balloon.
Interesting theory. Possible. We're going to take a quick break. We'll talk more about that when we return. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh.
Rand Paul. I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you. You fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.